you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
The Palindrome, Event Horizon, Angels Advocate, Last Ditch 001. Those might sound like sci-fi TV show episode names, but they're in fact the names of guns from a popular video game known as Destiny. Welcome to Kotaku Split Screen. It's September 22nd. My name is Kirk Hamilton, and that's the game we're here to talk to you about this week. Jason and I have been playing Destiny's new expansion, Rise of Iron. It's one of our favorite games and one of the few games that we both play equally obsessively. We'll be talking a lot about the new stuff in Crucible, the new story missions, getting ready for the new raid, and theorizing what the future might hold for Destiny. A lot of shooting, a lot of talking. Stick around. Well, here we are. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Kirk.
The saxophone solo played. It ended.
Here we are.
We're just sitting here.
I guess. That was the lowest energy possible.
Well, I guess it's time to do a podcast. I guess that's all there is for us to do now.
Wait, is this the one we're actually using?
Yeah, I think we're going to use this intro. It's time. It's time to record a podcast, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I guess we should give some context in that you had a previously recorded version of the intro that sounded too much like the intro segment.
It was too high energy for Jason. He was not happy with...
So you decided to go lower.
Oh, how man. Much energy I brought.
Hi, Kirk. Clearly you've been playing Destiny all day.
I'm tired.
An outlet.
Yes, yeah. I'm very tired. I've been shooting a lot of weird red aliens.
Yes, as always, which we will get to. So we are back. It is yet another Destiny content drop has hit. Mm-hmm. I think actually when Split Screen first started, September 11th, happy birthday, by the way, to Split Screen.
Yes.
We didn't acknowledge it on the show last week. but yeah, 9/11, never forget Split Screen's birthday. We started on September 11, 2015. I think Taken King had just come out or was just about to come out. So we are... This is our annual Destiny drop.
It's our annual tradition. It's fall. We're going to now talk about a bunch of stuff that people who don't play Destiny don't care about.
Or maybe they will. I don't know. We get a lot of notes from people being like, I don't play Destiny, but I like listening to you guys talk about it.
I pretend that those people are the mainstream and that the people we don't hear from who basically stop listening to our podcast forever because they're like, I don't care about Destiny, are you know, in the minority.
That's fair. Well, I think those people have stopped listening after they heard your low energy intro and they're like, nope, I'm out of here.
Wow, this is just a real bummer. It's not what I look for in my podcast content.
No, not at all. but before we jump into Destiny, we have to do our standard weekly features.
Yes.
Which are, so first of all, our weekly NFL picks.
Very important.
Dum, 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 dum. This week's weekly NFL pick is the Jets at the Kansas City Chiefs, and I like the Jets at +3.
All right.
That has been this weekly NFL pick.
That was good. That was a good pick. Solid.
And as for our second weekly feature that we have to get to is the Roomba Report.
Yes.
Which is where you tell us all the comings and goings, all the latest news, all the latest scoops on your Roomba.
All right. Well, in this week's Roomba report, I can report that the Roomba really likes to go off of my rug downstairs and can't seem to get back onto the rug because the rug is a little bit too thick. So the sensor thinks it's a stair or something. So I have to set up all of my furniture over on the side of the rug so that it doesn't go off of the rug. And I'm considering buying a little laser laser thing that can like set up a laser field that blocks it and keeps it in one place. So I might get one of those so I can keep it on the rug and make sure that it adequately vacuums the rug. Because right now I'm having to do a lot of, I'm having to pen it in because it really wants to go off of the rug. And
it sounds like the Roomba is like costing you more work than it actually saves.
No, I don't think that that's accurate. It's also fun, and I think I'm kind of learning how to manage it.
Yeah, is it like a pet?
It is like a pet. I have not named it yet. It is a boy, okay. Though. I can say for sure that okay. It is not a girl Roomba. It is a boy. We need a boy's name for it. We've gotten some pretty...
How can you tell that it's a boy?
I just can. I don't know. It's something in its energy. Okay. Just seems like a young man. So we need some more name suggestions. We actually got some good ones from readers yesterday or last week. And, I would be happy to hear some more. Maybe if we get enough, we'll read them on the show in next week's Roomba report. For now though, that has been.
So you could send those to splitscreen@kotaku.com.
Yes. And that has been the Roomba report for this
week. All right. Great.
In September.
Finally, those features are over. Now we can get to the real meat of the show. Destiny time.
Yes. Time to talk about Destiny. Destiny. Rise of Iron.
Yeah. So Rise of Iron came out this week. This is the beginning, I guess, of year 3 of Destiny, although really it's more like year 2.5.
Yeah. It feels weird to call it year 3, doesn't it?
It's not drastically different.
Yeah. It feels almost like an extension of year 2. I think that's basically my summary of Rise of Iron. Is it feels to me like I'm still playing year 2. It's just kind of a better version with even more stuff to do. Which,
yeah.
That sounds really positive. That sounds like I'm more psyched about Rise of Iron than I am, which I'm kind of like pretty medium on Rise of Iron. I know it's not the greatest Destiny ever.
You're medium on it.
Yeah, I'm medium so far. It's cool. It's just the same stuff. It's just there's more
right.
now. But
well,
it's a good game. So,
okay,
you know.
So just to describe it for people who aren't super familiar. So Rise of Iron is the latest Destiny DLC. I believe it's the fourth, if you count Taken King as DLC, it's the fourth piece of DLC. First one since last September, which is kind of astounding that it's the first one in a year. But it makes sense when you look at the timeline because Destiny 2 was supposed to come out this year. And then in January, when Bungie decided to delay Destiny 2, they couldn't get it out by this fall. They also decided to assign the live team to make a DLC pack, and that became Rise of Iron. Mm-hmm. So that was developed in 8 or 9 months since it started in January. The raid has been in development since last summer, and the raid was actually supposed to be in the April update, but it was pushed back to launch alongside this DLC when they did the whole reshuffling and changed all their plans around. So the raid we don't know about yet. It comes out Friday. And then the stuff that came in Rise of Iron is there's a new social area, there's a new patrol zone, there's some new strikes, there's some new story missions. It's very insubstantial because it was made in 9 months. But it's cool. I mean, you must have enjoyed it, right? So you're medium on it, you said?
Well, yeah. So the insubstantial part, the part that I don't love is, I would actually say that it feels very substantial in a lot of ways. I mean, it's given me a ton more stuff to do, and there's a new raid, which we haven't even played. But the insubstantial part, I think, is the story and the new areas and the
well, that's what I meant
yeah,
by insubstantial.
Yeah, I assumed that was what you meant.
Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, it's clearly been developed in 9 months.
It feels like it was made pretty quickly and like without nearly as much work as the Taken King had. So, and it's hard not to compare it to that since last September. We were basically, it felt like we were almost playing a new game. And this September, it feels like, no, it's still Destiny. It's interesting. It almost feels like a really blown out April update. You know, you said there hasn't been new content since last year, which is true. But the April update wound up being this surprise. I underestimated it going in, and it wound up being this surprisingly big deal update where they fixed so many things and made the game so much more consistently rewarding and made the loot work better and added some cool stuff to the game. And this feels like
now that I think of it, it's funny you mentioned that because I was thinking about a lot of people are asking, is Rise of Iron worth $30? Because for some more context, this one is $30. Previous DLCs were $20, and then Taken King was $40. But Taken King was more like a new game than any, it was like Destiny 1.5. But so people are asking, is this worth $30? I think if you're a Destiny player and you play it consistently, you got to consider that the April update was free. And I don't know, I kind of see that as kind of the first part of Rise of Iron. So
yeah.
Rise of Iron with it's kind of like $30 for this year's Destiny stuff. That's a good way of looking at it to feel less cheated if you feel like Rise of Iron is too expensive for what it actually offers.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and it really is. The story is very short. did a cool post about the final mission, which is kind of the only mission in the whole thing that feels substantial. And it's cool. It's a cool mission, but it's the only one. And you can tell, okay, they had to really prioritize what they could do and how ambitious they could be. And there's also just for me, I mean, so the whole story revolves around Lord Saladin and the Iron Lords, who are the, you know, the people whose names are on your Iron Banner guns that we've been earning for 2 years. And it's sort of the story of them, which is kind of a letdown for me, not just because Saladin himself is a boring character and is not played with any real charisma. There's this other guy, that scout guy, what's his name?
Yeah, Shiro.
Yeah, who's just boring. And there's just no, when you look at...
Yeah, his name popped up during one of the missions, and I was like, wait a minute, am I supposed to know?
Yeah, another gruff man on your radio telling you something. Yeah. So compare that to the Taken King, which is, I mean, first off, they've got the top-level voice talent in The Taken King. They've got Lance Reddick making jokes about Eris Morn in your first mission. And it was just way beyond. And then Nathan Fillion, of course, stealing the whole show. And you think about how funny that game was and how many good jokes and how many gags and how long the mission was and how consequential and epic it all felt. This is just nothing close. It's really short. And even... This will sound dorky, but I'm also a little disappointed that the story is basically the Iron Lords, who were the ultimate, like, badass lords of destiny, who have these amazing guns named after them. They all kind of died because of some weird, out of control bioengineered terraforming tool that became intelligent and just killed them in a virus. It was such a kind of ignoble end for them, and that just doesn't... It's just not as cool as, like, the stuff that happens off-screen in Destiny, you know? Some of the stories we hear about these legendary ancient guardians, to actually see it acted out, and it's just sort of this bummer. Everybody died to this virus and didn't actually really die because Lord Saladin wasn't paying attention and thought they died, but they weren't dead. It's all just... It's sort of an anticlimax.
Well, that's kind of a running theme, right? Like, the grimoires are always better stories than the actual stuff we see on screen.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing where I the more they explain of Destiny's world, if they don't explain it well, they run the risk of basically dispelling what we imagine to be so cool about it. You know, the famous story that I always talk about, which I'll brief listeners on, is the story of Thorin and the Last Word. And there are these grimoire cards you can find and read that tell the story of these two hand cannons that people could get, and this evil guy who had one and the good guy who had the other, and the evil guy killed the good guy, but then the good guy's protege picked up his gun and hunted him down, and they had this showdown, and it was super epic. And they actually even filled
kind of like Hamilton, you would say.
It was oh god, don't get me started. Yes, you could say that Shin Malfur did not throw away his shot when he activated the golden gun to kill Dredgen Yor at Dwindler's Ridge. I don't know if he was only 19 and his mind was older. But,
okay, continue.
I can just start quoting Hamilton right
now. Please stop.
For the rest of our podcast.
Please don't do that.
I really can. So anyway, that was a cool story. There was an interesting thing with that. I know this is a tangent, sorry. But where, I think it was Taken King came out, they released two more grimoire cards that told the full story of what happened. And actually, I remember even at the time, it's a really cool story, and it was super satisfying to read it play out and to see, like, the invention of the golden gun, and the whole thing was cool. But it also felt like just skirting up to too much information for me, because we filled in the blanks. We got it. We knew there was a showdown. We knew these guys fought. We could fill in the blanks in our head, and then they explicitly laid it out, and it became a little bit less cool. And so this feels like that, but like that actually really going wrong to me, lore-wise. I'm kind of bummed out to see the Iron Lords go down the way they did.
I don't feel like we got the full story of the Iron Lords. I don't know. Maybe that's just because of the deficiencies in the story that they actually told, but it felt very incomplete to me. Like, I felt like, especially at the end... Spoilers, but the last boss fight when you're fighting them, it felt like it was never really explained whether how they wound up that way, whether Siva had taken over them, whether Siva was pretending to be them. I felt like there was a lot that was left.
Well, yeah, and honestly, I'm sure I missed some of this just because there's a lot of lore being thrown at you while loading screens are happening, and I wasn't always paying attention.
It's definitely not well told.
Yeah, and you can't really follow it all. But just that whole idea, if those characters who have been built up to be so iconic die to this thing, Siva, which is just an artificial intelligence, I don't know, like a
tool. It's just not a very cool way for them to die. Like, think about the millions of awesome ways that a lord-like badass character could sacrifice him or herself to, you know, save the last city or something. And it's just kind of like, no, this thing went wrong, and they just died, and it sucked, and oh, they didn't really die, I guess. They're zombies now. But then you killed them. Yeah. Good job. It just doesn't have... It undermines what makes those characters cool to me.
Interesting. Well, so that said, the whole lore and premise of this expansion being themed around iron and the Iron Lords and all their cool shit and their wolves and Fellwinter's Peak, it's all really cool. It's a really good idea for a DLC. Another story deficiency, I think, is that it felt like you kind of discover Siva and then immediately fix it. Like, there's no middle act in the story.
And I'm curious because the raid, as you said, they've been working on this raid for a long time, longer than they've been working on this expansion. And I'm curious whether or not the raid will really factor into Siva stuff, because they keep talking about, like, this guy who's running, the zealot who's controlling it, which I think is the guy that you fight in the new strike, if I'm not mistaken. So that does make kind of close the loop. And then the other strike, which I haven't done, is the Sepix Prime reimagined one. It's Sepix Perfected. And have you done that strike yet?
No, but there's also one with the summoning pits.
Right. Like, apparently, the Sepix strike is amazing. Like, I've heard that from several people, that it's totally awesome and has, like, big moments. Yeah, I really want to do it. Maybe when we finish recording, we can go do it.
Yeah, we should do some heroic strikes. But wait, so hold on. So the Wrath, it's called the Wrath of the Machine, the raid. I mean, so this is all going to be moot as of, like, recording this, and we're gonna find out in like a day. So we shouldn't get too much into this, but I think the raid is definitely themed around all this stuff. I don't know how much story stuff will be in the raid, because usually there's no story or cutscenes or dialogue in a raid, unless they've changed things up for this one. I assume it'll be the same way. My initial thought, after there was that one line of dialogue about how Rasputin hasn't been a war mine for a long time, and the idea of Rasputin unleashing the Siva, I found really interesting, and I thought that maybe Rasputin would be the boss of the raid. It's like a surprise boss, which would be really cool, but I don't know. I could see
Rasputin being a boss or turning up in some way. It seems like there's enough unresolved weird stuff going on with Rasputin. But I do wonder, how much it'll tie in, since they've been working on it longer than that. I got the sense in the story missions there were some mechanics they introduced where you're pulling those sparks out and plugging them into other things. That'll definitely be in the raid. And
holding the sword next to the brazier.
Yeah.
But we can talk about that next week when we actually have played the raid. But as for the story, I agree with you. I think it was very undercooked. Very, very clearly. It was just short. It was just kind of... It feels like a stopgap DLC in many ways.
Right.
And in some ways, that's a good thing, because it gives us lots of stuff to do and cool things to experience. And the raid, which you and I see as a giant highlight for Destiny overall.
Right.
But as far as like a standalone story, it's definitely not worth $30 or not.
Right. It's like, definitely all the other stuff, which I'm only just getting into. And that, of course, with The Taken King, it was such a surprise with The Taken King, I thought, that the story was good and kind of 8 or 9 missions or something. I mean, in the total, it was even more. But the story ended, and then there were all these missions, and they invented this whole thing.
That story felt a lot more like a real, like, Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. That had, like, an actual resolution and some weird creepiness. Yeah, that was a lot better.
Yeah. And then, but then the meat of my time was spent doing the stuff after
doing
the
story. Doing the other stuff,
Which there's... you know, plenty of. There's at least some of that in this as well. I would say it seems like less than Taken King in terms of the scope of the story missions. Because remember, Taken King...
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, there was a sense in Taken King that, first off, narratively, they were dealing with something that worked better, I thought, where there was this invasion going on across every planet. And so wherever you were, you could go and like fight the lieutenants, the Taken lieutenants.
And then it led to that cool boss fight on Phobos.
Right.
Yeah.
And then also, this is easy to forget, and I forget about this, but there was also that whole House of Wolves resolution that was also included in Taken King, and was this whole quest line with Petravenge, where you hunted down the remainder of the wolves and you got that gun from her. And it was just a whole other thing that felt like, wow, this is cool. We're doing all this extra stuff.
I thought some of that was finished later with the April update.
No, that was all in Taken King. Remember, you get Boolean Gemini by doing the...
Yeah, but I thought they also added some, like resolution to the House of Wolves, to that plot line in Taken King.
Oh yeah, that actually does sound familiar. But I mean, but regardless,
yeah,
thinking,
no, I,
considering
yeah, yeah,
the,
your point
the scope
is that
of Taken
lot,
King,
yes,
yeah, it
yes,
felt
yes,
like there was just more going on.
So we should give. I mean, the caveat here is that we don't know everything that's in Rise of Iron, and like so. For example, I was looking through the record book. I don't know if you looked at that at all.
Yeah, I was.
And
I
saw
it.
So there's like a one record. It's this giant book where you get basically achievements and then you get rewards based on all the different achievements you do. So one of them is complete all four exotic weapon quests. And we know of three right now, I believe, which is Yallerhorn, Kostov, and then Thorn.
Right.
I don't think anyone's found the fourth one yet, so that might pop up.
There'll
at some
be
point
a secret one.
Future.
Well, and did you? There's also a page in the book that's just question marks.
Yeah, that's the raid stuff.
Oh, okay. Is that all raid stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah, yeah,
so that'll become. Like, as you, once the raid unlocks, that page will stop being question marks?
I doubt it. I imagine it will still be question marks, and you'll just have to figure it out at the during the raid.
Cool. Yeah, that does kind of give a sense of how much there is. And I wouldn't
I'm
be
curious,
surprised
by the
if,
way,
there's, if there's a hidden exotic thing, just like there was last year.
No, there definitely will be. The question will be, can they keep like distributing quests in the way they should have done last year? Well, what's interesting is that the live team, which was presumably established to keep people up to date with new content and drops and like making quests and stuff, because of the Destiny 2 delay, they had to start working on this DLC. So they weren't able to do much of that other than like the April update, which itself was mostly mechanical stuff and not a lot of content. That same team had to be working on Rise of Iron. So now that they no longer have a big DLC to work on, unless they have to work on another DLC, I don't know.
Just go on vacation for...
Yeah, man. But presumably they can be adding regular stuff. And they've already said they're going to do Festival of the Lost, the Halloween stuff, and then Spiral Racing League. That stuff's all going to come back. The question is, next year, assuming Destiny 2 comes out in September, which I think is a safe assumption, unless it gets delayed again, which is also very possible, the what are they going to do from January through September? And I think the smart approach would be like every month or every 2 months, just add a new quest to the game and give people something fun to do, like a little fun thing to do, because I don't think it's realistic to expect them to actually make a new DLC pack.
I would think if there's going to be one thing, it would be free, but it would be updated raids with like a light level increase.
Yeah. Yes.
A light 100%. Level increase. And then also maybe, I don't know how, I know everything is very hard for them. They're the kind of things that I think, oh, this probably would be that hard to do, but maybe they are. You notice how if you patrol Cosmodrome now, there is a second patrol level that raises the level of the patrol. So
there is.
Yeah, so there are more dangerous
Whoa.
Enemies. Yeah, Citation
no, I didn't
we
know
were
that.
Talking about that last night, but you know, you
are
can
you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I'll Google it while we're talking to make sure I'm not talking
about
my
Wait, what's the
ass.
Purpose? Do you get rewards?
It's like, I don't know. I think it's just tougher enemies, but it's because I'm pretty sure you can connect through from the Plague Lands, right? Back to the moth yards and stuff, or is it totally closed off?
It's totally closed off.
Okay, I'm Googling it.
Well, so the Plaguelands, I mean, they're like separate zones. The Plaguelands, you can connect to areas that are in the Cosmodrome, but are now Plagueland style, or you could go back to the Cosmodrome and see the original versions. Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't know. But yeah, you're totally right about the refresh raids. I want to see them put some Siva in the Vault of Glass. That'd be really cool, right?
Yes, I and then also raise the light level. Like I feel like one light level increase would be cool. And then something that does like actually the Division is doing this right now. They're doing the thing I'm talking about that I'm currently making sure I'm not making up, where you can set a level for like the city. You can raise the city's level and continue. So then, because the problem the Division has, the same problem Destiny had, where like patrol, like open patrol, basically becomes pointless once you're really high level because you just walk over everything and it's just not very fun. Where this is going to be good. I'm going to have Destiny open while we're recording a podcast.
Oh, are you going into
Destiny? Yeah, I'm going to go look. I mean, as much as you joke about me constantly playing Destiny, I don't actually do that, but I am currently going to do that. And then maybe I'll just play some Destiny while we talk.
Yeah, I was going to say joking is...
No, I'm just going to look really quick. I'm gonna go.
But yeah, so to talk a little bit about the quests that are in Rise of Iron. So after beating the story campaign, you get a couple of quests that have you patrol. You get the Yallerhorn quest, which is really cool. That's like a
man.
Nice
let's talk about the Yallerhorn quest for a second.
There's some really cool story missions.
I like the Yallerhorn quest a lot, just because
it's great.
It was basically a subclass quest from Taken King. Yes. It was the same structure where you do things in the world, then you go and you fight enemies on a multiplayer map, which that was really fun, that part. And there were so many things that I liked about this mission. I liked hearing Ghost. There's a part where Ghost is talking about like rocket launchers, and he's like, oh, look at this. Look at this part. Oh, that seems like this is a prototype for Truth. And this is, and then he lists a bunch of other ones too. It was all these more obscure ones.
When I was playing that, my first thought when I saw that was Kirk is going to flip out.
It's like all this weird little gun
nerding out over old weapons. Yeah. That made me think of you. I didn't want to spoil it for you, but it made me think of you. So that mission was really cool. That all that stuff at Bannerfall was super rad.
We're just fighting a ton of dudes.
I haven't done the Kostov quest yet, have you?
No, I haven't. I heard it's good, or has a good ending?
People say it's really cool. People say it's awesome.
Here's what my fact-checking is finding.
What'd you find?
I do not actually think that what I said was accurate. It looks like
that's what I thought. I feel like they would have told us that.
Yeah, I don't know. A couple of people I was playing with were saying that in chat, and this is why we fact-check, kids.
So, you're playing with random people?
No. Some of our friends.
Our buddies.
We're implying that was the case. It is not. But I think that would be a really cool thing for them to add to make those areas more interesting.
Well, there would have to be rewards.
Yeah, you'd get maybe a higher chance of legendary drops or something. I don't know.
Right.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So going back to what I was saying before, so after you finish a story command, there's the exotic quest, there are a couple of quests that are kind of random, like go patrol this area and do a bunch of random patrols, and they're kind of like the grindy, like go fill off these task marks to get some Engrams quests. And then there's one that unlocks the new strike. The new strike is whatever, it's fine. The boss is cool.
It's kind of cool that there's this big asshole that pushes you around. That's an interesting thing they haven't done before, where you're fighting a shielded, smaller guy who has a gun that does damage, and then there's just this huge ogre stomping around after you. What I was finding that was interesting about that fight that was driving me crazy when we were doing it was that the ogre pushes you, so you'll be trying to res somebody, and you can't even get the res done because suddenly you're moving because this idiot is pushing you. And it was driving me nuts just because I don't think there's
I know. You kept screaming on your microphone.
It was screaming, yes. It was very frustrating.
I don't think you hear yourself the amount that you curse and yell at the microphone while you're playing Destiny.
I think that you exaggerate. That's
no,
what I think.
No, I do not.
Jason, exaggerate? So never. That would never
happen. When I said the strike was just whatever, I meant the stuff before the boss. The boss fight is really cool.
Yeah, I don't really remember.
Before it, it's just like, because we were we were like talking about other stuff. It was like you just blow up some SIVA clusters.
We were playing it at a lower level. I would imagine that playing as a Nightfall or a Heroic, which I'm going to do some Heroics later today, I think will be more engaging.
Yeah, wait for me to get home from the office.
More challenging. And apparently the Heroic strikes drop blues that go up to 365 light. So did you hear this? This is going to be a hot tip for our listeners that I've heard about is apparently, do you remember Grasp of Malak, all of that?
What do you mean, do I? Yeah.
Like, so that's the gun that Omnigul drops. It's the raid-specific Omnigul gun. And
So,
and then people figured out a way to farm it. Did you ever do that? There's a way that you can farm where, okay, so
that's,
you know,
like the opposite of what I want to spend my time doing.
Yeah. I started doing it, and then I basically had the same conclusion. Is this is the opposite of how I want to play Destiny. It was right around where I just stopped being interested in playing that way. But so what you do is, you know, when Omnigul appears down that hill, kind of right before the boss room, you come around this corner and Omnigul is just standing there.
Yep.
So there's a way, if you and your team know what they're doing and you use tethers, you can like just crush Omnigul right there.
Oh, and you could kill her?
Mm-hmm. And then you can, I think, I'm trying to remember what you do, either die or you go out to orbit like really fast. And then just you can load that. I think you can just load a checkpoint right there.
Interesting.
Basically, it's a way to super quickly farm Omnigul. So now you can use that, apparently, because Omnigul drops blues if you're on the Heroic Strike playlist or whatever it's called now, the Sivas Invasion Strike playlist.
Yeah.
Omnigul drops blues that are really high light. So you can kill her and grab a bunch of blues and then do it again and again and again. And you can just farm your way up to 365 super quickly. It's kind of a cheese.
Yeah, well, so the only reason to do any of this sort of weird cheese grinding, whatever, would be to prepare for the raid, like to be high enough level.
I mean, sometimes I think that stuff is a fun goal end unto itself, only because it feels like you're exploiting the game. But yeah, I think it depends on the kind of person you are.
Yeah, but we do have to be 360, or that's the minimum.
I think as long as we're 350, because I do remember this, that in King's Fall, in the last raid, the first several areas are below the required light level. It's only the final boss and maybe final two bosses or something. So even if we're not 360, it'd be fine.
We'll have to update people on our raid progress next week. So what we do is we have a core group right now of six of us who are planning on doing it. And we all, I mean, I would get really mad if anyone was looking up stuff, because I insist that we all do it blind.
You're a tyrant about it. Jason is
I mean, you know what it is? It's like we get these once a year now, and they're pretty much the highlight of Destiny. And the reason they're the highlight is because it's so satisfying to, as a group, work together to figure out the puzzles and figure out how to defeat each encounter. And there's something really rad about that. And like I feel like it's ruined if someone is like, what if we do this? And it's like, clearly he just watched a stream and figured that out.
I don't think anyone's tried to pull that, but I know what you're talking about. It's funny because it's a fine line, right? To get back to the Gjallarhorn quest, because we were talking about that, parts of that quest are obnoxious, or just they're things that I don't feel that way about. We just kind of looked up, you had to go find the year 3 equivalent of calcified fragments, and to find 5 of those, I decided I don't really care about taking the hour and a half that it would take to just look around. And if so I was playing with
some of those were pretty
I was playing places. With Adam, and we just looked up where to find 5, because come on,
but that's way different. That's literally pixel hunting. This is like actual puzzle solving, which is a lot more rewarding and satisfying.
And then I very much enjoyed the end of that mission where everyone just has Gjallarhorns and this epic music starts playing and there are just heavy ammo crates everywhere and you just blow shit up with a Gjallarhorn.
Oh, so you did do it with other people?
Adam and I did it together. So, it was the two of
us. I did it by myself, and it was really fun and challenging. Yeah. So I have to tell everyone about what I experienced last night. So last night, have you tried to climb the mountain yet?
You have to get,
one
of the quests requires it to get
the Iron Medallion.
I have not climbed the whole thing, though. No.
Well, so I was climbing the whole thing, and as I'm doing this, I think I was in a party chat with you and a couple other people, and I kept hearing you cursing and raging because you had just started the Gjallarhorn quest, and you were mad that you couldn't join Russ and Adam.
You could speak for me, I guess, or I could explain what I was mad about. It was actually extremely annoying.
Yeah, you were mad because you couldn't play with them because they were a little bit ahead of you.
No, but also because I started a mission. I had started the Gjallarhorn quest thinking, okay, and went and got the quest that I needed to do it, which is one of the patrol missions. Went all the way inside the Archon's, Archon's Forge, that big building, or the Archon's Keep, and spent forever, you know, figuring out how to get down there. I go all the way down, and then you need some key to open the displicer key, which I now, of course, have like 15 of because they drop all the time. But at the time, I was just thinking, okay, I want to catch up to these people I'm playing with so I can join them. So I go all the way down there.
Yeah, I think what they want you to do is do other stuff before you start the Yallarhorn.
I guess, but they also start you off. They're supposed to start your patrol right with an enemy right there that you can get one from. Anyways, it was just this confluence of things going wrong where I can't open this door, and then I'm backtracking and trying to figure out how to do it. And then I was loading back in over and over again, and the enemy wouldn't spawn, and so I couldn't get the key I needed.
So what was funny for me is that I'm like getting frustrated, trying, like slamming my head against the wall or whatever, trying to jump up the mountain, and I hear you going, fuck, come on, what the fuck is this shit? like you were so mad, and like Russ and Adam were just playing something else and just like chill, like talking, and we're all just listening to you like raging over the microphone. It was fun times.
Yeah, it was good. The cross chat of an early Destiny launch is always a little bit ridiculous. Like two people are strategizing something that the other two people have nothing to do with. One person is mad at something that the other people can't see.
I mean, we should really just use different parties.
I guess. I mean, there's something, I guess you guys would probably take issue with this, but there is something nice about being able to share your frustration with your friends. you know, just if you're stuck on something stupid. But
wait until you try jumping off the mountain. It is the most frustrating thing, dude.
Yeah. I'm gonna do it. I heard if you max out your agility, it is a little easier.
I don't think that helps that much. It might be specifically hard for me because I'm playing Warlock, and Warlock's jumps are the worst, so that does not help. But you can't like double jump or triple jump or anything because it's a social space, so it's it can be rough.
Yeah,
you'll see.
It just seems like it's just like hilarious comedy of errors as Guardians all fall off this giant mountain and die. And try to get up, I'll have to do it. Don't tell me what's up there. I'm sure it's something stupid.
So there are some other things in the Plaguelands, which we haven't really talked about. The Plaguelands is really cool. It's a really nice size social area.
I think it's laid out a little bit weirdly. I will say my criticism of it is I think the layout is a little odd. You spawn
really? Yeah, I like it.
You spawn in so far from everything, and I don't really see why. I don't see why you would spawn in, and then you have to go around this huge loop.
What?
To get
well, from the Archon's Forge.
Yeah, from the sort of
center of
everything.
By the way, have you done the Archon's Forge?
I have not yet done it.
It's weird, and people say it's... Well, so apparently you can only hold one of those things, those Siva things, at a time, so which is very much unlike the Court of Oryx, and kind of makes it pointless, because why would anyone want to keep doing it if they can only hold one at a time and you can't just hang out there? So basically nobody's gonna be hanging out there and farming stuff like they do in the Court of Oryx.
It's weird. I've heard the approach is that you send them to your other characters, so you can have four. It's just you can't.
That is so stupid.
Well, that's very Destiny.
that's like vanilla Destiny.
It's weird
stuff.
That they don't stack.
It's not just that they don't stack, it's that you literally one won't drop for you if you're holding one. So you can't, it's not like that you'll get a bunch in your inventory.
So I have one of the 360 light level ones. Does that mean I won't get any more on my Titan?
I don't know. I don't think so. It doesn't seem like that. It's weird. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't done it. I've heard it's cool, though. Like, I don't know.
Well, so what happened was, so I go up there, and it's like, can you picture it? So there's a ledge that you're standing on when you actually insert the Siva thing to summon and open the Archon's Forge. Mm-hmm. So I'm standing on that ledge, and I insert it, and I just kept standing on the ledge expecting things to open up. And I get a little message saying the Archon Forge is closing, and I'm like, okay. And then it says the Archon Forge is closed, and suddenly there's a wall in front of me, and I can't go in because apparently they shut off that ledge without telling you that ledge is the part that gets gated off. And then the way it works is you can use a splicer key to get back in if you die. So it's like one of those, it's not like easy to just run back in like it is on Court of Oryx. It's something you actually have to use a resource to get in. So I did that, and then I got back in and the splicer key was used, and then it said like something like the Archon Forge was too challenging and it all stopped.
Yeah,
that was my experience with the Archon Forge.
That seems problematic. That seems
very user unfriendly, which is again very Destiny.
Yeah, well, and again, requiring these sorts of resources that run out. It's similar to needing that key to get to that place to do the thing and to get Gjallarhorn. There's that, you know, it's
at
all,
least those are plentiful though.
Yeah, but it's still the sense of sort of gears that are supposed to turn within one another, but that don't always because they're not informing one another. So as a result, mm-hmm. you didn't get the thing separately that you needed to do this one thing, but you didn't know you needed that. There's sort of that feeling. And the Archon Forge seems to me, from everything I've seen about it, that it has a couple of those issues where you need things to do it that you didn't know you needed. You're holding things that are limiting from you from getting the things that you needed, and the game didn't tell you that. Which, yeah, does feel very year one, which is funny. You said that's typical Destiny.
Well, but sometimes that happened a little bit in the Dreadnought, too, where it would be like, requires key of whatever.
Yeah, but those were one-off, and the gears didn't need other gears to turn with one another. That was just, you got the thing, and then you had to figure out where to use it. It was more straightforward, key goes in lock. This is more like you need the one item, but you can't get the other item if you're holding this item. And then also to get back in, you need this item. And if you got out, you're locked out if you don't have that item. That's just more, it's more layered, and so it doesn't work as well.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. But other than that, I mean, I think the Plague Lands is actually pretty cool. It feels like a lot of the areas, the different sections have a lot more verticality and a lot more interesting encounters. Mm-hmm. And I think, so one of the other things I discovered you can do with Splicer Keys is there are a bunch of different areas that you can unlock. So like if you go back to the bunker area, you can actually work your way through and there's a Splicer Key gate, and you open it and you get to that area with the three guns, the kind of battery area from mm-hmm. the story. Mm-hmm. You remember that with those big three guns you mm-hmm. have to destroy. And then you go there and there's an axe you can pick up and there are a bunch of enemies you can destroy. But there's nothing happens after you destroy them. So it's not really clear what's actually there. And I imagine there are some sort of secrets that people still have to discover, which is really cool. I like the idea that there's still stuff that we haven't figured out yet, which is hopefully the case. Hopefully there's still a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think there's probably still some stuff, but not a lot. I think that they've done a good job with rewards as well. Did you do a public event?
Yeah.
Did you notice that you got 15 legendary marks and I got a legendary Engram as well, which I think everybody playing with did. So that's kind of cool. It makes me want to go do public events more. And, you know, it's that continuing sort of slight, you know, rejiggering of this or that and making the game a little bit more rewarding and easier to play, which is cool. I also think it seems like the drops. So to talk Crucible a little bit. Can we talk Crucible a little bit, or should we do that?
Yeah, I was about to bring it up. I was about to say, have you tried Supremacy?
Yeah, I played a lot today.
It's awesome.
It is. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because...
Oh my God, I love it.
It's great. Hang on. So let me say what's frustrating about it. What's frustrating is that people don't know what the hell they're doing yet. So we wound up in some games. I was playing with our friend Mike, who is very good, and he and I were rolling together. You have to roll together in this game, and there are so many interesting strategies. It's really cool.
Which one? I was doing Rumble. Which one are you doing?
Oh, no, we were just doing regular Supremacy, Team Supremacy.
Oh, wait, so how many, what are the team sizes?
Well, Team Supremacy is, I think, far more interesting than Rumble Supremacy.
Really? Yeah. Wait, hold on, what are the team sizes?
6v6.
Rumble was the daily play, or the whatever. So I did that. I just did that on stream and crushed everyone, which was a lot of fun on Kotaku's Facebook. But yeah, I really enjoyed
that. That's fine, but the team dynamic is what makes that interesting, is because there's much teamwork where you'll take a guy out and then you camp, you know, you can camp his whatever it's called, his crest, and someone will go try and get it, and then you get that. There's so much teamwork where if somebody's got your back, you can run in and 1v1 somebody and like trade, but then as long as your guy is there with you, he can grab both crests and basically cancel out their kill. So it leads to all kinds of interesting strategies that have not at all taken place yet. Because no one knows what they're doing. You know, even good Crucible players are still getting their heads around what's smartest to do in what given area and what choke points and how to approach, because there's so much baiting. Like when heavy drops, this was something that we found that was really interesting. When heavy drops, it gets so interesting because, you know, you'll see one of your guys go down and you want to go get his crest. Should we explain what this is to people who haven't played it yet?
Sure.
I think it's a Call of Duty mode that this is basically straight
kill confirmed.
Kill confirmed, a straight lift
up. It's simple. I mean, you kill people and then you only get points if you get the crest they drop when they die.
And if someone
can gank your crest. Yeah.
Well, and in a team play, if your teammate dies, you can grab their crest and deny the point to the other team, which is like a big dynamic in team, is you want to be grabbing your friends' crests.
So what I would do, because I play Sunsinger, I would get into situations where I could self-res and grab my own crest.
Yeah.
which was really cool. And that's one of the things I enjoyed about playing Rumble. But yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it in Rumble.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's fun. Rumble's
I want to try it more with team. Have you done any private matches yet?
Of Supremacy? No.
No, of just like private matches in general.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wrote an article about them. We played them when they went live last week. They were super fun. It was way more fun than I thought it was going to be. But wait, let's talk Supremacy and then we can talk private matches, because that's a whole separate thing. And that's true. We hadn't talked about that on the show yet, huh? Because we haven't done any private matches together yet, you and I, have we? I think we need to do that. I think we need to do that and talk about who wins on the show.
I think we should stream it.
Just stream Jason versus Kirk, grudge match for the ages.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
And then you can say, instead of telling me not to die, you can tell me to actually die.
Please die. So I think Supremacy is interesting. One interesting thing about it would be like really high level small team play with Supremacy, which I don't know if they've done. I think Supremacy can be a modifier for other game types. Is that correct? Do you know if that's like, could there be a skirmish Supremacy? Could that be?
Yeah, well, that's why, I mean, Rumble Supremacy, so I assume it's the same.
So a 3v3 Supremacy with really good players would be awesome, because think about if there were a sort of Trials of Osiris style thing with Supremacy where you had to run over the person's body to get the point for killing them. It would change everything about the dynamic of how those games work. In particular, it changes the engagement distance so dramatically. And I mean, it does in 6v6 as well. It just becomes a shotgun fest, and partly because shotguns are really good in the meta right now, but partly because you don't want to snipe people because it's not a good idea.
There's no point.
Right. And so
I imagine that's one of the reasons they did it, because so many people use snipers so much.
Yeah, it changes up the dynamic, and then that came along with a sniper nerf, so that tracks. It's interesting when I think about Trials of Osiris. You know, the engagement distance in Trials of Osiris is so far. Usually the first engagement tends to happen at a distance, and it's kind of the two teams skirmish for a second at long range, and then someone gets a kill and push. But if you watch any of the, you know, Crafty or Triple Wreck or any of these, the really, really good players who stream, they all play with snipers. And it's just like a fast snipe long range thing, where Supremacy just by its very design doesn't encourage that. And it's interesting. It really just, it's so different that I don't have my head around it. And it makes the games kind of frustrating, because some people just don't know what the fuck they're doing. There are people who just will have like one point at the end of a game, and you're sitting there being like, oh, dude, you have to get crests.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's really cool. I like it way better than Mayhem, that's for sure. Mayhem was kind of dumb.
Mayhem is different. Yeah, it's just silly.
No, but I mean, as far as like thinking about all the new Crucible stuff they've added,
yeah,
like this is way more interesting. Whatever happened to the vehicle stuff?
They just stopped using it because those maps were so unpopular. I think they were finding that people would just leave because those games take forever. I mean, if you've played a game on first light, is that what it's called, or first watch, first light? I think the one the moon map that's so huge. If you've played a game on that lately, it's just. Sucks. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. It's these weird indoor choke points, and everyone's just.
We should
sniping.
Do a private map on that. Match on that.
Oh man, it would be like the most dangerous game. It would be us hunting one another across this giant map. That would be fun.
Dude, that'd be so much fun.
That would be pretty fun.
What was the other thing we're gonna? Oh yeah, private matches.
Private matches,
so those
yes.
are fun, right?
Yeah, they're great. I did not realize how fun they would be. Did you ever play split screen Halo? Were you a Did you ever really
Yeah,
do that?
When I was a kid, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess not a kid, in like college, high school.
Yeah, we would, when I was in college, so that was, because I'm a little older than you, that was when
did Halo come out? When did the first Halo come out? Like 2000, 2001?
Yeah, that sounds right. 2001 or 2002. It was my senior year of college, which was, I think that year, 2002, 2003.
Got it, yeah.
So that came out, and we played that game a ton, and I just hadn't done that in a long time. And I know you can do private matchmaking in Overwatch, but I've never really felt the urge to do that. And this is just, it felt so much like that. I was playing with a few of our regular raid crew, and we were just playing. We actually played Mayhem for a while, which was really funny and really fun. And then we played regular Rumble, where it was just all of us trying to shoot each other. And it felt like those days of Halo, where you're just laughing and laughing, and like there's so much shit talk, but it's all really good natured, and you're playing with your friends, and you basically, you know, you laugh just as much at when they get you as, you know, when you screw up, you can it just doesn't feel at all stressful or competitive, at least with our group.
Interesting.
I could see with the wrong group or the wrong, like a toxic person in there being a dick or kind of actually like making people mad, that it could be bad, because obviously anything like that can be bad. With our group, it was
that's
great.
That's the case with anything.
Right,
yeah.
Right. It was
we
fun.
Could do that. It's good. I've seen you and a couple other people mention that it's good as like a pre, while you're waiting for other raid members to show up.
Yep.
It's like a good thing to do. Yeah, we should try that on Friday when we're
inevitably waiting for somebody.
Man, I'm so excited for that raid.
Yeah, me too.
That's a real highlight. It's interesting. I was going to bring up before. So there was some stat a while ago, like I think when Destiny first launched, that only like 1% or some very small percent of Destiny players actually play the raid. I would be curious to hear the stat now, because I imagine that's a lot bigger.
Because it's a percentage of a smaller number, basically.
No, because I think the people who stuck with Destiny like inevitably tried the raid, one of the raids at least, and I think the propagation of like Destiny LFG and other tools like that have made it way easier for people to raid, even if they don't have a bunch of friends who play Destiny. So I think that it's actually become bigger than people think, and I always see people use that argument. Like I saw a bunch of game of reviews of Rise of Iron go up on today and Tuesday, which first of all is so dumb, because there's no way of evaluating this until we actually know all the stuff that's in it and play the raid and stuff like that. But I saw some people arguing that it's fair game to review it before the raid comes out because so few people play the raid. And I'm very curious to know that actual number and know if that's actually the case, because I feel like there's tons of stuff about Destiny that's fun, but the real highlight is always the raids. So if you're really spending this much money on the game, why not at least try to do raids with random people or something?
I understand this. Even with LFG groups, it's still just, I can understand people just feel intimidated or they don't want to play with strangers because it's a crapshoot and you never know when you're going to get some militant little shit who's yelling at you the whole time and makes you never want to play video games again. So I guess I do understand why people still don't. But reviewing this is interesting, because I'm reviewing this for us and I'm going to write something about it. Expansions are weird though, right? Because they're not the same as games, like as full games, because they're just not. Like it's an existing thing. And writing about Rise of Iron, to me, it just feels like you would want to know everything in it before you say anything about it, because it's not like a new Destiny game. It's just a more substantial update to the game. So you might as well take your time and know what
it
involves.
Doesn't benefit anyone. I hate to be super cynical, but just because there's really no benefit to having a Rise of Iron review on day one for any reader, for any player of the game, it just feels like it's a clear thing of like, we need this traffic for people googling Rise of Iron review, so we're just going to throw it up and we'll update it later, I guess.
I wonder who reads Rise of Iron reviews, or who's even looking for reviews of Rise of Iron. I guess people want, I mean, anyone who plays Destiny
always googling that stuff. Any game review and like game release dates, those are always super googled terms, stuff like that.
Yeah,
basic stuff. Even before a game comes out and before there are even reviews, people right now are googling Final Fantasy 15 review, and there's some like sites that are run by robots that are set up to be the first Google results for those for stuff like that. It's really crazy. It's a wild world of SEO.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
But anyway, I just don't think it serves anyone to have a review up right now. And it was the same thing with Taken King, and it was the same thing with the original Destiny. I remember when people were running reviews of Destiny like 3 days after the game came out.
Well, even with that game, at least it was like, okay, this is a new game that we're going to review. Once Destiny is such a known quantity, to me, it always just feels like, why would like, why would you rush your opinion at this point? Everybody who wants to know about it at least knows something and wants to know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and it's like the question of whether or not to buy Rise of Iron is very difficult to answer. It's not. It's like the answer is you already know the answer.
Yeah, exactly.
You want more Destiny, or
if
you don't.
Played as many hours of Destiny as you or I have, you're probably going to pay $30 to get an expansion. Yeah. I mean, you know, it doesn't. Yeah.
And actually, well, so at this point, I feel like, and this will make a good segue for a question we wanted to do before we finish things off. So at this point, I feel like if you haven't played Destiny, or you just played a little bit in year one, or you skipped around a little bit, getting to buy all five things, the vanilla and the four DLCs in that $60 package is an incredible deal, because you're getting so much stuff in there.
Yeah. We can read this question and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more. I have some conflicting thoughts on that, but,
okay.
But I agree. It's a great value if you're purely looking for an amount of cool stuff. You're getting a lot.
Yeah. I mean, even playing through, okay, let's do the question and then we'll talk about it. All right. Let me read it out. So, Mike says, "Hey, Jason and Kirk, I love the show, and after hearing you guys gush over Destiny, I decided to pick up the Destiny collection.
Gush.
Having but a meager few hours in, I'm left to wonder whether I should take the traditional route of grinding, playing, dying, retrying, etc., or take the Taken King shortcut and bypass the first 25 levels, which is that thing you get. It's like a level booster that you get when you buy the game. Also, this game promises to consume a vast amount of my free time in the foreseeable future, which as an attorney and dad is already at a premium. Am I getting my $60 worth by playing through the early missions or wasting my time? Conversely, is the learning curve so steep that I will be lost in the dark if I take the shortcut?" I'm interested in your thoughts, as well as any advice you may give to a Destiny newcomer, as you both have a substantial pre-existing time investment. Keep up the good work. So, that's a lot to unpack. There are two big questions there. One of them is it worth it? Well, it's really, is it worth it to use the shortcut at this point? What do you think?
That's an easier answer. I think, sure. Yeah, go for it. There's other levels to earn. And I think we even said this when Taken King came out. Just go play the Taken King stuff.
And skip the Vanilla Destiny.
Yeah, because Vanilla Destiny, if you go back and play those missions, they're all really boring. And, you know, if you're a new Destiny player, there's at least a chance that you're going to find some friends to play with. Then maybe at some point you can go polish off those Vanilla story missions. But they're not very good, those story missions.
No, they're not essential.
Especially compared to the Taken King. And, you know, I would say do House of Wolves. House of Wolves missions are cool. And then, yeah, do Taken King. And then, because then you'll also do Rise of Iron after that. And those missions are also cool and go by fast enough. So, yeah, I would say yes. That answer is pretty easy. Sure. Skip the first 25 levels. Doesn't really matter. And go to the, kind of get into the
Taken
King.
But here's the other thing. The other angle of this I hadn't really thought about, and Mike asks, is the learning curve so steep that he'll be lost if he takes that shortcut?
So
that's an interesting question.
Bigger question. And, like, I don't think it really relates to jumping to level 25. And I don't think
it does. No, well, I'm thinking of, like, character progression and learning how to use your abilities and stuff like that, which is something that you learn gradually as you're leveling.
I mean, I think that's going to happen no matter what, and I don't really see why.
When you think about the original, the early days of Destiny, right? When you're at level one, you have such and such abilities. Then level two, you unlock your grenade or whatever. Level three, you unlock your melee ability. And you gradually learn that stuff.
Yeah, but I think that you don't really learn any of that stuff, even if you've maxed out your character, until you go deep. You learn those things you just said. You learn how to do a double jump and how to throw a grenade, how your special works or your super works. But then there comes a point where, you know, you don't really know Blessing of Light versus Weapons of Light. You don't know why it would matter if you had faster recovery versus more armor. Like, some of those things just get really particular, and you kind of learn those no matter what over the course of play. I'm not convinced that the game itself really teaches you that stuff. And if I recall correctly, if you use the 25 level boost, you don't max out you don't get points in your subclasses. You still have to level those up. So it doesn't really matter. You're still leveling them up and learning them one at a time.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't just give you a maxed out character. It just levels you up so you can use better gear faster, which lets you level up faster. So that just saves you time, I think. And that's worth doing. And
what was that? Was the level cap in Vanilla Destiny 20 and then it was light level to 30?
It was it to 30? No, it was Forever 29 was the meme, right?
So it was 30. Because I remember to get to the Vault of Glass, you had to be like 26.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Did you see, so by the way, memories. As a side note, we talked about this, I know, but in real life, but that screenshot that was going around
of
the original vault with about three things in it. It was just, I got an anxiety attack just looking at that. It was crazy. It just had, it had nothing in it and it was full. And now I look at Destiny Item Manager and it's just this, just covered in hundreds of things, which kind of cracked me up. So the bigger question of the learning curve and being lost, my general sense is that there are some fundamentals of Destiny, some fundamental gameplay things, and some fundamental design things that you just pick up over time, and that each separate piece of sort of content, like House of Wolves or Taken King, it does a good job of being kind of self-contained with its mechanics. There's some crossover, I think, with House of Wolves and with this, like the Scorch Cannons and those guns where you charge them up by shooting them, and some things that you maybe just wouldn't pick up automatically on your own. But generally, it does do a good job, I think, of if you start with the Taken King teaches you how to play the Taken King. And the more general Destiny stuff of just aim for the head and how to use a grenade is just stuff you would pick up no matter what you're doing. They're still like a unit.
Well, that's also, I think you always have to do that first mission before you even get to the tower. So you're always getting the tutorial mission.
Yeah. I think, no matter, I definitely wouldn't worry that you wouldn't learn what to do.
Yeah. Well, also the way it's structured now is it's structured in quests. So you can do one of the quests and not all of them, of the vanilla quests and not all of them. You might not, if you're playing for the first time, you might not realize which are vanilla and which are Taken King. I think the Taken King ones still have that symbol.
But it's
over
easy
them.
To not notice.
But if you just do that and then you can go back and play, I don't know. I wouldn't do all of the vanilla storyline, but there might be some benefit in doing like one or two quests of the vanilla storyline.
And you get to hear Nolan North do all the new lines.
Yeah, that's true. But also to get to know the planets, because that's one thing that you do want to know. Even though for Taken King and Rise of Iron stuff, it's not so important to know every crevice of Mars or Venus or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's still useful to know if you want to play it seriously and start doing stuff like exotic sword grinding and all the other brutal stuff.
It's tricky because there's also a thing that I think the letter writer should keep in mind, and that's that Destiny has always done this weird mixture of telling you stuff but then not telling you stuff. So they explain some lore to you, but then other stuff is just sort of abstract. And I think it would be really easy, and this is kind of a problem the game has, is you come in halfway through and you're not sure which is which, and you're not sure what you're not supposed to know. So you think, oh my god, I'm supposed to know all of this stuff and I'm completely lost. Where in reality, those of us who've been playing a lot are also kind of like lost. We don't know what some of that stuff is either, because it's all abstract and it's just referenced in text or something. But we at least know what we know.
It's not a game where you can really care about the story.
Right, but I could see coming in fresh and thinking you're supposed to care about the story. And if you just start the Taken King, just thinking, what the hell is going on? What is everybody talking about? Because you just don't know what, you would think that you'd missed stuff. So I guess it's,
I don't know, Will, but I feel like the Taken King is self-contained enough. Like, it's like, here's this bad guy, Oryx, go fight him.
Yeah, but there's like times where it's like Zavala is on the radio and you're, who is Zavala? And Zavala's talking to Eris Morn.
Yeah, but that just happened to us in Rise of Iron with Shiro.
Yeah, right.
It's the same exact thing.
But Shiro is a new character who has not, I don't think, been introduced. Where Zavala's coming in, you know who Zavala is if you played Year One Destiny and if you played through the story.
Not really.
Right.
You might know his.
So what I'm saying is, if you were coming in fresh, you wouldn't know how much you're supposed to know who this person is, and it would just probably be kind of confusing. I don't really know if that's how it would work, but that could be kind of frustrating. And
you wouldn't know how much the game has time to explain and how much it doesn't have time to
exactly.
explain.
And the game would not have had time to explain to you what it didn't have time to explain.
Exactly.
And you also didn't have time for it to explain.
Right. I got it. Okay. But ultimately, I think getting that package is a pretty great deal.
Yeah.
And one of these days, when I have some actual spare time, I think I'm going to delete one of my characters and start from scratch and do all of the story missions over again, because I think that'd be fun to revisit the entire game.
Sure, yeah, I think that would be fun.
After 2 years. There's a lot of stuff in there, even though players complain about lack of content, which is totally valid.
Yeah.
Now, if you are just coming into it fresh, there's a lot of content.
It's overwhelming. I think the game has finally reached the point when I look at the whole thing and how many guns there are that drop and how many different abilities there are and how like complicated it is and just how much there is, it would be really overwhelming just to try to get your head around it, all the different weapon types and what everything is.
In that sense, yes. But in terms of like, so the main thing that you do now when you're a high level hardcore Destiny player like we are is either the raid or heroic strikes.
I mean, the main thing that you do now is you complain.
About Destiny, but yes. Destiny, a video game where you go around complaining about Destiny. So the main thing you do in PvE is either the raid or heroic strike playlists or Nightfall, right?
Or
those are
Crucible.
The three main things. No, I said in PvE.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So in those things are the main things. And like the heroic strike, the strike playlist and the Nightfall are very limited amounts, and the raid is only the new raid. So one of the things Destiny has been really bad at is keeping old content relevant to the point where like there's so much stuff they've made on Mars and Venus and Earth, everywhere really, that they could incorporate in some way but just haven't figured out how to do it, so that everything can be replayed. And I think one of the core concepts for Destiny 2, hopefully, mm-hmm. It's basically like starting from scratch. So I hope one of their core concepts as they go into that is we want to make a game where like pretty much everything is replayable and rewarding
and like moddable, replayable. Like the way that Diablo 3 works, where whatever you're doing,
exactly.
There's always some difficulty modifier you can add that gets you new shit and makes it so that it's appropriate.
Although hopefully it's not. Diablo has the advantage of being procedurally generated, which we wouldn't want out of Destiny.
I mean, sort of quasi procedurally generated, but yeah, at in places. But yeah, I mean, they're different. Yeah. But just that thing of okay, anything you're doing the very first level of the game, turn on the modifier that puts it up at whatever Inferno 4 difficulty, and now suddenly you're getting sick loot drops that match your level. Like isn't there in Destiny? I would imagine because it's just not possible for them. Clearly not possible for them to do it easily.
No, it's just built in a different way.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think if they look at something from the ground up and they're looking at Diablo, which I think they're doing, I think the right way to approach it is like we want to create things. And it's also such a waste of resources when they make, like, look at that. I was thinking the entire time on that first mission, the mountain top, I think that's what it's called, or something like that. Something about climbing the mountain,
mm-hmm.
Where you have to go up and you go on the cable car and you go reclaim Fellwinter's Pink. That whole time I was thinking this is really cool, but they're never going to use this again, and they just spent all this time building this level that we'll see once and then just go playing the same strikes all over again. And I'd rather them find ways to add fresh stuff to those. Like, think about like Phobos and that entire first mission of the Taken King on Phobos, how cool that stuff was, and now you'll never see it if you're a hardcore player because you play through it once and there's no reason to go back.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a place for that in Destiny. Like, there's a place for cool scripted things that just aren't really the same after the first time you do them. It's interesting. You can even see it a little bit in this expansion because Challenge of Elders is still relevant, and you can get 350 light gear from Varix. So they brought back Challenge of Elders.
Can you get stuff that's more than 350 from Challenge of Elders?
I'm not sure. I haven't done it yet. But but just the fact that the light level has been raised for things. And
right.
I'm assuming the challenges now goes up to a higher level.
Yeah, I guess anything that drops purple engrams is now relevant.
Right. And well, that's true. And so, and they brought back, that was in the April update, right? Challenge of Elders coming back.
Yeah.
So that was a thing where you can tell they really want to be using their, the stuff they've already made and making it relevant. They just, it's very hard for them to do it. So it's, uh-huh. I'm hopeful as well about Destiny 2.
By the way, did you know that in the story of Destiny, the Queen is still like MIA and nobody knows what's up with her? Like, because it's funny, it was like people presumed her dead, and then there was some throwaway line of dialogue that was like, she's not really dead. And like, there's a belief that she's not really dead, mm-hmm. but that was never really resolved, right? I don't remember if the April update had stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to remember the thing I'm remembering the thing you were talking about where the April update did reference it in some way, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, the April update was about fighting a clan of fallen dudes, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. There was something. Yeah. Well, I can't.
No?
No. That was in the Taken King. Uh-oh. We've reached like Destiny brain melt point.
Yeah.
It's all melting together.
Well,
yeah,
it speaks to
I remember that
Destiny's
I remember thinking the obvious way for this story to go is the queen comes back and there's some cool thing that happens. And then that didn't happen.
Wait, no. Hold on. I think I got it. Okay, so the April update had that new strike with the like invader, the guy who
wanted to
be...
Yeah, that was like a Taken or something, right? Or Hive.
Yes. I think it might have been an earlier update, like in January or February or something. Maybe there was Varric stuff and like a new quest line involving the House of whatever. Do you know what I'm talking about? There was a fallen house that you had to kill.
Well, that's the
House of
the
Kings or something.
Oh. Fuck. Yeah, I do remember that. Wait, look it up. We should have resolution on
this. Yeah, I think the best way to run a podcast is to speculate about the things we forgot.
And then look them up as we record. This is two Destiny experts, ladies and gentlemen, and even we can't keep all of this stuff straight.
Hey, man, we keep most of it.
No, I'm saying we're very good at it, but even no matter how much of your brain you dedicate to this game, at this point, there are things that just sort of fall through the cracks.
Yeah, and a lot of it is cool. I mean, the lore in Destiny is really just like stands out. Mm-hmm. The problem is that it's the way the stories are told, such as Rise of Iron story, are just not that great, mm-hmm. sadly. Are you looking things up?
No, I'm assuming you are.
Oh, okay.
Are you checking Twitter or what?
No, I'm not checking Twitter. I'm checking your tweet from last week and seeing how the notifications
still
are
doing really well.
I'm looking at so February update. No, so February update was Crimson Days. That was the PvP, you remember?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time remembering. I don't think there was an update that had missions in it. That was
There was. There really? Was definitely a mission. It was a strike, at least. Here, Return to the Prison, Blighted Chalice.
No.
Oh yeah,
Blighted Chalice is the one. That's the April update.
That's the new
strike.
That was the April update strike. Yeah. And then there was Fallen stuff. Well, because they added. I don't know. Maybe it was.
It might
something
have just been
added.
Taken King
I remember
King stuff.
There being something added later. Maybe it was added like in the months after Taken King. I don't know why I remember Fallen stuff being added later.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I mean, I think of the Fallen stuff as all being in Taken King.
Okay, I could be wrong.
But yeah, who knows? But yeah, anyway, to the thing about the Queen, I agree. It is weird that they didn't.
That they didn't resolve it.
Yeah.
I
mean, they still
find
it. They still could, you know.
I guess so, yeah. But it's been a long time. It's been a year. I mean, it's testament to... I mean, really, the fact that Bungie's DLC/live team was able to make something as substantial as the Plaguelands in just 9 months. And I don't know how much of that was, like, had been planned in the past mm-hmm. or whether... that entire zone just started from scratch in January, but that's pretty impressive. And the fact that they put together this entire DLC pack with all the stuff that's in it is pretty impressive and makes for a good stopgap until Destiny 2, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how good a stopgap it is in March, you know, if they haven't added
that's
anything.
True.
I mean,
but I don't know. Everyone says that, but it's like, whatever. So play other stuff.
No, right. I mean, and it depends on what you want from a good stopgap. Like maybe it's just enough to go play Destiny. That's fine for me.
Exactly.
I mean, I can already tell.
I just want another raid. I would kill for another raid next year, but refreshed old raids with like new mechanics, I would totally take those. Those would be
and
fantastic.
A light level raise.
That would be a perfect update. Yeah, really, I would be totally fine. And we should wrap things up soon, but just real quick on an end note, I would be totally fine with this. Stop playing after like a couple of weeks or whatever. Once we figure out the raid, they do more stuff, the Halloween stuff and the Spyro Racing League, and then like another March or April update with refreshed raids with new mechanics, and then Destiny 2 in the fall. Like that would be totally fine with me.
Yeah, I can already tell that this expansion, I'm not going to play this expansion as hard as I've played some past ones. It just doesn't. It's not because there's not enough in it. It's just because there's not enough in me. I think there have been two expansions so far with Destiny that I played really, really hard. The Dark Below?
Passables.
Well, the Dark Below, actually, that was one where I was really hitting up against the wall of that because that expansion had some real problems. And I just remember playing it to where I felt like it was just unhealthy and not fun. House of Wolves I played a lot of, but it never quite felt that way. And then Taken King.
Are we going to play more Trials? We have to play some Trials.
Yeah, man, totally. I'll play Trials with you.
Okay. I thought you were done with it.
No,
you
no, heck no.
Really down
no.
on Trials.
It's a mess. I mean, it's so hard now. It's like such stiff competition. But yeah.
So we'll get someone to take us.
We're not getting to Mercury. That has become.
But what if we did?
It'd be cool. I'd love it.
Let's see.
So anyway,
I got to Mercury last time.
We didn't get to Mercury in year two. Unless you paid people to take you there or something and I didn't hear about
year
it.
No, one.
Yeah,
year one.
Year two, though, is crazy hard.
Yeah, I know. Well, now I guess this is year three.
Yeah, well, you know, anything goes. But anyway, I played The Taken King an absurd amount. I think I wrote an article about this last fall, yeah. Just being like, look, I need to not play this anymore. It was a good experience yeah. in a lot of ways. It helped me like know what it is to play a game in that way, which I'd never done before. Just totally live it and breathe it. But I'm not there anymore. And I'm not there with this expansion. And I would imagine there are a fair number of people who feel similarly to me, who think, look, this has been a real fun ride. I've gotten a lot out of it. I'm psyched that it's in this place where I can go casually play it if I want, and I'm going to play through this stuff and then move on and play something else until the sequel comes out.
Yeah.
We start it all up all over again.
Yep. Join us next week for us freaking out over how good the raid is. And
hopefully,
we're never going to stop playing Destiny.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about it next week. Maybe we won't do a whole Destiny episode, but we'll talk about the raid for sure.
Yeah, next week, for those of you who listened through this entire thing, waiting for us to talk about something else other than Destiny, we are sorry.
Nope.
We will revisit us next week for... A, more weekly NFL picks.
Obviously.
B, more Roomba report.
Some important Roomba
C,
updates.
C, more gaming talk that has nothing to do with Destiny.
None
and maybe
Destiny.
I'll talk about... I'm really excited about this new Kiefer Sutherland show, Designated Survivor.
It sounds bad. I read the thing about it.
It sounds incredible.
It sounds incredibly
bad. I'm going to watch it and talk about it.
Okay.
But we'll revisit next week.
Okay, I'll look forward to hearing about that from you.
All right. As always, you can reach us at splitscreen@kotaku.com. with any questions /stories/suggestions/ Roomba name suggestions,
yes.
Roomba fan art of Kirk riding a Roomba.
Yes. Roomba fan art in general, very appreciated.
And we will see you next week.
Yeah, bye everybody.